Welcome back to the Make or Break Show, where each week we bring you stories of incredible makers and the make or break moments that have defined them along the way. I'm your host, Brandon Cullum, and this week we chat with Daniel Jansen from Switch and Lever. We get into his background in interaction design and how he's combining skills from a large array of disciplines into his projects. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the show. I hope you are having an amazing week and you are getting to build some cool stuff in the summer weather, at least if you guys are in the northern hemisphere. I was actually looking at the stats the other day, and we definitely have some folks from way down south, even in Australia. So if you guys are listening from down there, thank you so much. But thank you guys so much for being along for another episode. Like I said, we're hanging out with Switch and Lever today. This is with Daniel, and he is calling in from Northern Italy, which is real fun. But we're going to get into his background here in just 1 second. Like I was mentioning last week, first and foremost, thank you so much to all the awesome supporters over on Patreon. Could not do the show without you guys. And I've been updating Patreon, and there's going to be more updates here very soon. The big thing is I'm combining this podcast with the YouTube channel, the Make or Break Shop, which is all of my DIY videos. I'm trying to get a video out pretty much every other week at least, and sometimes just every week. And so last week I had a video go up about an X-Wing swing I built for my daughter. And if you guys did not know, at the very end of these episodes, I kind of give you guys an update about the stuff I've got going on. But there's different reward levels now that include that, including your name in the videos, as well as kind of some behind the scenes stuff for the builds. In addition to when I do more practical stuff, maybe not like an X-Wing, but like a crib or even like a play kitchen, I'm making plans and I sell those, but at the $10 tier, you guys will get that, as well as the 3D models. Any new one that I make, you'll just have free access to that going forward. So I encourage you guys to check that out. Again, that's patreon.com/makeorbreakshop. All right, so we are hanging out with Daniel this week. Daniel, again, is Switch and Lever over on Instagram as well as on YouTube. And his stuff is just really interesting. It's honestly kind of hard to describe unless you saw it. His projects are really, really unique. For example, he took a water meter, wired it up, and connected it to the internet so that the level, the physical dial, would show his subscriber count on YouTube. And so he just does some wild stuff like that. And I don't think I'd made the connection too well beforehand, but he is actually one of the guys that works out of Jocko's shop. So we had Jocko whatever on the show, I think earlier this year when the Maker Knife was coming out. If you guys don't know what the Maker Knife was or is, it was a really successful Kickstarter on just an awesome utility knife specifically for makers, and it blew up. If you're in this community, you probably have heard it. If not, you've already have one. And so Daniel was actually part of the process of getting that manufactured, especially over in China. So there's some update videos about the build process and the manufacturing process, and Daniel is over there with them. And so Daniel actually works out of Jocko's shop, his big, massive shop that they're building out right now. And he doesn't work directly for Jocko, but they kind of work in the same area with a bunch of other makers as well. So we get into his background and how we met and all that kind of stuff as well. But yeah, Daniel's doing some really, really neat stuff. I think you guys are going to enjoy his perspective and just how he is approaching things, because he has a really good background in interaction design. That's what his education was through, and how he is bringing just a bunch of different skills. So he describes himself as a journalist and how that applies to his projects. So without further ado, let's jump into our interview with Daniel. Okay, so I want to definitely rewind the clock a little bit. And did I see you have a pretty heavy art background? Is that right?
Not so much art as design, I guess. I mean, it is art of a sort, but it's a lot to do with, you know, production and all the almost like engineering parts as well. So there's a definite mix between both the art and the analytical and hardcore production sides.
Yeah. So when I guess before you went to university, what type of stuff were you into? Like, were you into design, tinkering around, that kind of stuff back then?
Yeah, I guess I have always been creative. There's always been a force in me trying to do stuff. So I was doing product design and product development at home in basically my boyhood room before I even knew what product design was. And then I applied to this school and ended up kind of sliding in and getting a master's of design in the end. So I guess it's turning something I didn't even know what it was into a profession. And I worked professionally as well as both product and interaction designer in Stockholm for a few years.
Oh, cool. So when you said you're in your childhood room, like, what was the stuff you were making?
I mean, anything. I think I started in disassembling stuff. So anything right. I got, I destroyed in fairly quick process. But my dad had this amazing garage, so I learned like how to do welding at a very young age.
Oh, cool.
And then there was this huge gap in my teenage years where I found out about computers and so forth. So I didn't really have the hands-on so much. It was more digital stuff. I did digital painting and art, photoshopping, and got into 3D modeling and animation and so forth. And then through design, I kind of got back to this physical side of making as well, and learning about metalworking machinery and milling and lathes and all sorts of that side as well, CNC, of course. So it was kind of a coming full circle back to my childhood in dad's garage again, in a sense.
Yeah, that's really neat. When I was a kid, I was super into rockets, and so I wanted to do engineering, so that's what I went to school for. But I always loved mm-hmm. drawing and like digitally painting and all that kind of stuff. And anytime I tell people that, it's like those feel like those are two different worlds. That I didn't even know that like design, like industrial design was a thing until much later. And I was like, yeah. Oh man, that would have combined it. And now what I'm doing is a lot of fun because it is that combination. But it's so crazy how those skills overlap when people don't think that kind of the right brain, left brain stuff would interact a ton.
Exactly. And I think that's a fallacy when people think that art and creativity is vacant from engineering and those like hardcore science subjects. I think there's so much creativity going on there as well, but it's just not the traditional putting paint on a canvas kind of creativity, but it is a very much still out of the box kind of thinking.
Yeah. So fast forward then to today for a second, given like all of your skills, and I definitely encourage people to check out your YouTube, but I'm sure a lot of them already have, but your intro is really funny because it's just I'm going to do this and this and this, and it's all these different skills from the physical to the digital. Would you say there's one that's kind of your, like, you're really, really good at, or maybe it's the one you enjoy doing the most of all the different assortment of things that you can do?
I think I'm very much of a generalist. I hardly ever go into a project with, oh, I'm really good at this, so I'm going to do this. It's more I have this idea for a project, and what skills do I have and what skills do I need to acquire to make this project a reality, basically.
Yeah. So maybe then pulling it back a little bit just to creating a project, going from like the idea stage to the finish stage. Do you have a favorite part of that process?
I think going from the back way of that, my worst side is definitely the follow through and the finish. The start is always the most interesting part, where, oh, I have all of these amazing ideas, and before all the real life restrictions start making themselves known, that's, I think, the most exciting part. And then you need to dial it back a little bit and see what actually works in the real world. But trying to get those ideas and oftentimes, if you have people to work with, then you can kind of springboard off one another and get even crazier and crazier ideas and get this amazing flow going. I think that's the really amazing side.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's not always that common to get, but when you get it, it's sublime, I think.
Yeah. And so when you do have an idea and you're thinking through a project, like, are you sketching stuff out physically? Are you 3D modeling stuff? Or does it kind of depend on the project that you're working on?
I always carry around a notebook, and more recently I've been carrying around an iPad with a Apple Pencil as well, so to be able to save things, because so often you get these amazing ideas out of the blue and you have nowhere to kind of get them down or jot them down, or you try to maybe record a small idea into your phone or something, but then when you listen back to it, it doesn't spring the same kind of ideas again. So I think it's, you need to have a way to get it down. And so I try to do that, and I try to also go into 3D as quick as I can to kind of get an idea of how things interact with each other as well. So it's not just a two-dimensional sketch. It becomes, in a sense, it becomes alive when you go into to three dimensions. Even if it's just a very, very simple box you're making, just to get an idea, what's the size of this going to be, and how is it going to work in the environment it's going to live in?
Yeah. So are you using, do you use Fusion 360 for most of your 3D modeling stuff?
It's a mishmash. Okay. I've been learning Fusion for sure, but since back in the during my work days, I learned SolidWorks and Rhino quite well. So yep. I've been using those when I can as well.
Gotcha.
So it's oftentimes using what does the job basically.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely wish I was better at Fusion, and I need to pull my thumb out of the proverbial backside and get to it and learn Fusion better for sure.
Oh, gotcha. So you mentioned just the more of the art side of things, like with Photoshop and digital painting. I mean, did you get deep ever into like 3D modeling on that side of things, like Maya or like 3ds Max or any of that type of stuff?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I started out in 3D Studio Max when I did my first kind of foray into 3D modeling.
Oh, cool.
So I mean, a lot of the animations and so forth that I learned to do back then, I can still apply those ideas today.
Yeah, and that was something I loved about your videos, was the digital animation stuff. Like some people, I feel like will get like templates for like Final Cut or Premiere. But I was seeing stuff, I'm like, I'm pretty sure he's making this stuff not any of that. Like this is custom stuff, but it's like the timings are right for how the things are moving, and is really cool to see that.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's very rare that I get templates for things. I've made up my own templates, and of course, I mean, you download icons and things right. like that. But in the sense of the bigger creative picture, it's all from me for sure.
Yeah. So when you were in university, you said you got your master's in industrial design. Is that right?
I have a bachelor's in it's basically product design, but it's industrial design, and I have a master's in what's called interaction design. So basically, how products and systems and services interact with the user, in a sense.
Got it. And so, was that Nuisance? Is that where that came? Was that like your master's project?
Oh yeah, that's a long time ago.
Because that was. It seemed like such a cool, I mean, it is a really neat idea for people that maybe aren't familiar with it. Kind of how did you come up with the idea, and kind of what is it?
So Nuisance, yeah, it was my master's thesis. So it's basically a platform to be able to do, it's for designers primarily and makers and so forth that make systems that will interact with the human body. So tangible interactions. So I think the simplest way to explain a tangible interaction would be the vibrator in your phone that it buzzes whenever you get a call. That vibration is a tangible interaction. And Apple has done a lot of that with the Apple Watch and the Taptic Engine in their phones and everything. So it was kind of a way to easily, without having to know programming and without having to know electronics and all of that, to be able to get a feeling for how different kind of tangible interactions can work. And you can prototype not how they will look in the final product, but yeah. how they would feel and interact when before you actually go to that stage.
So it's kind of like, I mean, this is a really bad analogy, but almost like a Lego kit in a way that's super modular, to where you can do the wearable technology stuff where people can kind of mess around.
I don't think it's a bad analogy at all. It's very apt. It's like electronics Lego with sensory input and tangible output, in a sense.
Got it. So when you were leaving university, were you wanting to work in interaction design for like a big company, or kind of what were you thinking at that point?
I didn't have any plans. So directly after university, I actually moved to Turkey. Then, or the plan was to move to Turkey, and then I get a call from a company like, "Hey, we saw that you graduated. Would you like a job?" So I got stuck in Stockholm for a while because of that.
Gotcha.
It was a really cool company though, so I'm not complaining.
Yeah. What? So where did you work?
It was a company called Veriday. They used to be called Ergonomy Design, and they've been around for like 40 years or something in Sweden. One of the original kind of industrial design companies with a lot of pathos within product design. They've made tools for a lot of big brand companies, and they were kind of transitioning more into interaction and service design. So that's one reason why they brought me in.
Got it. So what were the type of projects you were working on?
Oh, it was very, very, very mixed, but everything from apps and a little bit of like web stuff, but we do the design and not the development. So only like how it will look and feel in a sense.
Okay.
And work, of course. But then I worked on a really big, massive project within the medical industry. Worked on making a lot of prototypes for a lot of different kind of projects. So screen based interactions, as well as like how will different interfaces like feel and look, and how will they logically work. And unfortunately, a lot of it is still under non-disclosure agreements. So I can't mention.
Right.
Even though it's super cool stuff, but yeah. Maybe we'll see it on the market in a few years.
Yeah. So it sounds like, was it both the digital and physical interfaces?
Yeah.
Okay.
Oftentimes they intersect. So you have a physical input into a digital system. So a button, for instance, would be a physical input into what essentially is an electronic system in the background.
Got it. I know you can't go into specifics, but like when you would, especially on the physical side of things, do you guys just have just like bins of random parts when you're like prototyping stuff quickly? Like, or are you custom milling different things depending on what you guys are working on?
It depends a little bit on the level of fidelity of the prototype. So while I was there, I was building up this electronics workshop, which essentially ended up having bins of both standard components like regular micro switches, toggle switches, and whatnot, and also used any sort of random stuff that I could find that ended up, you have one or two of them because they're going to come in useful at some point, and it's going to be cool in one project or another. But then as the prototypes become more and more highly refined, you start doing more custom stuff, and you start actually honing in on how things will look and feel, and also how it will work with the customer, because the customer oftentimes have their own design language already established. This might be their 28th product in their line, so you need to make sure that what you're doing also fits in with their ecosystem in a sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. And so what'd you do after that?
So after that, I got a bit tired of Stockholm and Sweden, so I moved to Turkey and ended up living on the side of a mountain high up in the middle of nowhere, basically. We had no running water, electricity from solar panels, outdoor toilet, the works. It was a stark contrast.
How did you go from like a big city to the middle of nowhere?
It was a reasonably easy decision. I mean, I grew up in the north of Sweden, and I spent a lot of time out in the nature with my dad when I was a kid, and so forth. So I've always had this kind of urge of going back to nature as well.
Got it. So was there a lot of like practical, like a making that you had to do in that type of environment?
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, the first thing I did was to make a handle for the bathroom door.
That's good.
So the house had been there for a couple of years, but yeah, they never had a handle for the bathroom door.
That's wild. So were you working in product design at that point as well?
No, I mean, at that point, I was basically living off savings, but it was a very, very cheap way of life. And we were growing our own stuff, and we were canning and pickling and selling at local markets and so forth. So we kind of made enough to go around, but it was a very cheap way of life.
You were full out off the grid, just living off the land, it sounds like.
As much as possible. I mean, we did go into town once a week to get some creature comfort, Haribo candies and stuff like that. So I can't be completely separated from society, but as much as possible.
Yeah, yeah. That's crazy. That's a massive change. And so did, even though you had that experience earlier, like, has that just practicality of just making what you need with what you've got, like, does that influence what you do now?
I wouldn't say as much in the making. It's taught me maybe a little bit to be less of a perfectionist, because I can definitely just spend 90% of the time of a project working on like 2% of the finish of something just because I want it to be perfect.
Got it.
So I think you learning to use what you have on hand and accepting the fact that it's not going to be perfect, I think that was a good learning for me personally. But it also learned me to be more humble about my situation, that to be humble that having four walls and a ceiling that doesn't leak, that's actually quite a luxury.
Yeah.
And not everyone has that luxury to live with.
Did I see you had like an internship in San Francisco at one point as well?
Yeah, I was at a company called Smart Design. They don't exist in San Francisco anymore. I think they have an office in New York and London now. So they were doing, product design through and through.
How soon after Turkey was that?
Oh, that was during my master's.
Oh, during your master's. Okay, that was way before Turkey.
Way before Turkey, yeah.
Got it. So did you go from Turkey to Italy then?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. So, well, via Sweden. So I went back to Sweden to actually get my driver's license, and then I bought a car and then directly basically drove to Turkey.
Gotcha. How did you come across Jaka then?
So back in, when was that? 2016 maybe, or 17. I got my work to send me to Maker Faire New York. So I met up with Jimmy for the first time, and I met Jaco there and a bunch of other people. So we spent some time together, got to know each other a little bit. And then, we talked a little bit online and, the usual stuff. But I didn't really know him as a person much before I met him during the cross-Europe drive.
Yeah, yeah. So when you were coming in, was it just like a visit? Like, I'm going to hang out with you, or did you know kind of this could be a potential like job and I can kind of have reach here?
I mean, I'm not in a sense, I'm not working for Jaco. I'm working with Jaco. So aside from living here, I'm not getting any pay from him. So it's more of a, I scratch his back, he scratches mine in a sense.
Got it. It's almost like an artist commune almost a little bit, where you kind of have a shared space, shared supplies, but you're doing your own thing.
Yeah. In many ways, I think that's a good analogy.
So when you went, I guess, to China with Maker Knife, was that just because you were around? And so, hey, let's go to China because we're doing all this production stuff.
Yeah, and we needed people to be able to help out there, and the expertise I have as well from product design and product development and so forth was quite helpful while I was there as well. So I took care of a lot of the nitty gritty details around making the customer databases and a lot of that kind of stuff to be able to fulfill the orders, not just to make the knives, of course.
Yeah. How is China and just that area, how does that compare to like the Western world? Like, is it a lot different just how they approach things?
Oh, it's wild for sure. I think there's a lot of similarities. So it's not like going to Mars and meeting right. Martians, but in a sense on how they approach things and the culture of prestige and honor and what's it called? Oh, now I'm losing words as well.
No worries.
that's what I was saying. It's getting late. but to have good esteem in front of your business colleagues, that's something that maybe you don't think as much about here. Here it's all about business, but there, people, at least in southern China, in the Guangdong area, people don't make as much friendships as they make business partnerships. Huh. So they go out drinking and eating meat. They have, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but they have a term for going out drinking and eating meat kind of friend, and that's a typical kind of business partner that you maybe don't you only interact with them when you eat meat and drink alcohol, basically.
Yeah So has any of that then influenced you, like, today? Like, do you approach things any differently just being exposed to that, or is it just a lot different?
I think being in China, just as well as being in Italy, there is a language barrier. I don't speak Chinese, and unfortunately I don't speak Italian either. So it's always to have kind of a system of checks and balances, so to make sure that did this person understand what I was actually saying. And especially in China, when you talk about production and you talk maybe about should this thing have a chamfer or not, and make sure that they actually understood what you were telling them, and that the response you got was a response that actually made sure that they understood it. So it's not just this, okay, no problem, and you're not really sure if they understood or not.
Got it. So when you were, what year did you move to Italy?
Last year, I guess. Yeah, I've been here for like 6 to 8 months, something like that.
Oh, wow. So not super long at all.
Yeah.
So then YouTube, then you've been on that for what, 5 years or so?
Yeah, 2014, I think.
And was that just you were seeing a bunch of other people posting projects and you kind of wanted to do that as well? Or what made you decide to get into it?
It started out actually with a guy called Tom Lipton, or Oxtools, as it's called on YouTube. I had been watching a lot of his machining videos for quite some time, and I kind of wanted to thank him about something about that. But I was, you know, a poor student at the time, so I couldn't just sign up for Patreon or whatever he had. So I made him a small little brass hammer, since he's collecting hammers. And I sent it to him, and I made a video about it. And I was like, this was kind of fun. I should make another one. And he showed it in his channel. And so I got like 1,000 subscribers overnight. And like, huh, I can get subscribers doing this. People actually like what I do. So it kind of just kept going and going. And the snowball just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And eventually now I'm here 5 years later still making videos.
Yeah. So is most of your kind of, I guess, job, quote unquote, like making projects for YouTube, like a content creator in a sense, or do you do other stuff as well?
Yeah, right now it's basically just content creation. I'm not really looking for anything else right now. It's more like I'm in a state of figuring out what I want to do with my life. And I, you know, the question, what do you want to do when you grow up? I'm not sure I've grown up yet, so I don't know.
Yeah, I'm 30. Gosh, how old am I? I'm 33, and I'm still like, yeah, what do I want to do when I grow up? It's like I have a one-year-old child, and I still know.
At some point, it's going to be, oh, so what do I want to do when I retire?
Right. It's like, or maybe I'm already retired the way I'm doing stuff now. So was there a point then with YouTube that it wasn't just something you were just kind of putting videos up, or did you know kind of from that first hammer video that you wanted to be pretty consistent with it?
No, I think that came quite some time later. The time I actually started was when I was doing my bachelor's thesis. So it became kind of a way of procrastinating for that. Luckily enough, I managed to pass the thesis anyway, but it's regardless of what I've done on the side, if I even if during the time I was working in Stockholm, I got permission from the company to do my videos in the company workshop. So it became this really nice respite from maybe a long day of work to actually just be able to go down in the workshop and work on my own kind of projects. And then it felt kind of natural that since I have a YouTube channel, I've made videos in the past, to just kind of keep that going, because I do enjoy the editing and kind of narration and storytelling part of it as well. So it kind of fulfilled a lot of things beyond just making projects for myself.
Yeah. So just going through your projects, I mean, yeah, like you said at the beginning, you have you're a generalist, and so there's tons of different just areas and skills, I feel like, that you highlight. When there's something new that you're wanting to learn, like, are you just going to YouTube and searching folks? Like, how do you learn something new?
No, exactly. I go to YouTube and I nerd down into the subject for at least like a full day, just watch anything I can come across.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's this weighing of, do I now have enough skills to want to attempt it myself, or do I need to acquire more skills? So, for instance, for blacksmithing, I took a blacksmithing course over the course of a weekend to actually get an idea of, is this something that I want to try doing further before going into like building my own foundry or buying a huge ass anvil and you know that side of things. But I think I'm not extremely obsessive over things aside from acquiring knowledge. It's like being an alcoholic, but I'm a knowledge-aholic. I'm full of like random trivia about things I will never use in a million years, but just so interesting to learn new things that I don't think I can ever stop that kind of obsession.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I'm the same way. Like, I know some people that like just having the knowledge and like showing it off, like I'm almost like I'm smarter than you. But I feel like at least you are the same way, is just that whole process of like, oh, this is something totally brand new, like this new world that I get to learn about. Like, you get excited about that. Like, that's really fun to dive into.
Yeah. And then the risk is that you start just talking about it so much that you bore everyone around you who's not into this specific thing that you are.
Yeah. Yeah. I listen to tons of podcasts, especially when I'm in the shop. And my wife she's like, every time you're like, I was listening to this podcast, and then I tell her about something crazy, she's like, whenever I hear I'm listening to this podcast, I'm like, all right, here he goes. This is gonna be something dumb. What's so blacksmithing then? How recently was that you took that class?
Almost that like 2 years ago, I think.
Oh, so a while back. So have you incorporated blacksmithing then in some of your projects?
No, but I mean, I've been talking with Jaco, and as we're building up this shop, I think it's a definite must that we will have some sort of blacksmithing corner in the shop for sure.
That's cool. How do you incorporate electronics in the stuff that you're doing, where you have just like, this could be the straight woodworking or straight metalworking project, but wouldn't it be cool if I could add an Arduino or something crazy? Or is it just kind of like how do you approach electronics?
No, I think it's kind of like what I touched upon before, that I have an idea for a project, and then I look at what kind of components do I need to make this project happen. And sometimes it's only wood, sometimes it's only metal, and sometimes it's a mishmash of things, and sometimes it's obviously electronics. And I know like things like Arduino and Raspberry Pi and so forth reasonably well, but I'm not into it in the sense that a lot of people are electronic nerds. I'm into it because it can do something very specific for me in this very specific project that I'm making.
And one of my favorites where you've incorporated something physical with digital was the YouTube subscriber level meter. Mm-hmm. What was, or first off, how would you explain that if people just haven't seen it?
So it's a really old water meter with like it's basically has a dial and a hand moving across it. And what it does is it pulls in my subscriber counts from YouTube, and it increases the measurement on the meter. I think it's up to 1,000. So every 1,000, it goes back to zero. So if you want to hear want to know the full subscriber count, like right now I'm at what, like 115,000 or something, you have to pick up this receiver that's hanging on the side of the levelometer, as I call it. Hold it up to your ear and push a button, and the Arduino inside will actually read out the full subscriber count number by number.
That's cool.
In your ear.
Yeah. Do you have that up right now?
I don't, unfortunately. It's right now it's in storage in Stockholm.
Yeah, yeah. Do you find that you have just a ton of like or just random projects just sitting around either in storage, or do you give stuff away?
Oh yeah, yeah. A lot of the projects I've made have been gifted or were intended as gifts to begin with. So I've been trying to offload, but unfortunately, a lot of it is currently in storage.
Do you have this is kind of like asking who's your favorite kid, but what are some of your more like memorable projects for you in the making process?
I think that the levelometer for sure is one of my more memorable ones because I learned a lot about the communication of between Arduinos, since it has actually two Arduinos inside.
Oh, cool.
Learn about speech synthesis, online APIs, and you know all of that. And I think also the stool that I made that's made from bent wood lamination is a It's a complete woodworking project, and it's rare that I make just completely woodworking projects. I learned a lot making that as well, and I think the memorable projects are primarily those that I learn as I'm making it, and also the projects that I make mistakes, and I learn how to kind of rescue the project as I'm going through it. Or, of course, the projects where I hurt myself, like when I made my skateboard and I stabbed a utility knife straight through my thumb.
Oh, that was
memorable for other things, for right. The scar that I still have on my thumb.
Good gosh. So talking about working in like a community shop, like how does having other people around affect your process? Because I mean, you've definitely built stuff solo for a long time before, right?
Oh, yeah, for sure. But I've always been in shared spaces.
Okay.
First at the school workshop where I started out, and then in the workshop at the work that I got after school, and now in this workshop. So in a sense, there's always been people around. I think that it has good sides and bad sides for sure. The good sides is, of course, you can get some really good input, or you can get help from people who have expertise in areas that you don't, obviously. I think the downside is there's this man that maybe not a lot of people know about in the maker community, but he's called Mihaly Csikszentmihalyi. I probably butchered his pronunciation. but he's written a lot about flow and how you get into the flow of doing things. And I think a lot of people have experienced that when they've been working for hours and hours and hours and hours, but they didn't feel like it. It felt like they worked for a very short time until they looked up on the clock and they realized it's already 3 o'clock at night. So you get into the flow of working things. It's like smooth flowing like a river in a sense.
Yeah.
And I think when you have other people in the same space, at least for me, it's much more difficult to get into the flow and much easier to get out of the flow because other people can, in lack of a better term, disturb you.
Right, right.
Even though they don't mean to necessarily, but it's something else that you need to consider in your sphere of working.
What is, do you kind of keep typical hours? Like, I guess if you had a day job, what is, like, what's kind of a typical day for you?
Wake up, get into my car, drive to the shop, spend what, like 8-9 hours there, drive back, sit in front of the computer, edit video.
Right.
And of course have lunch at some point.
Yeah, and then talk to random people on the other side of the globe at night.
Yeah.
that's cool. So
I mean that's a very, very short summary, of course. A lot of things goes on. Right now it's been a lot of sitting in front of the air conditioner just trying to survive because we have a heat wave going on.
Oh geez, yeah. It's I'm in south on the US and right outside of Atlanta, Georgia, and it's getting very, very tasty.
Yeah, you should be happy we don't have the camera on because I am a hot mess.
Yeah, I need to do a video version of that just to get more subscribers for people watching. But so you've been, it sounds like, to a good number of maker events. Is that right? Like the maker fairs or, yeah.
Yeah. I think I've hit up Maker Faire Bay Area 3 times now, and then Maker Faire New York 2x, and then Maker Central, of course, this year. But that's about it.
Okay.
I've been thinking about maybe going up to Hanover in Germany for Maker Faire during the fall, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah. So what is Maker Central like compared to Maker Faire?
So I think Maker Faire, well, Maker Faire is kind of difficult because Maker Faire San Francisco is a lot more artsy, right, and it feels a little bit like Burning Man combined with the maker movement, because you have these like huge fantastical machines and everything. Whereas New York, it feels a lot more business oriented, where you had a lot, like so much more focus on 3D printing and manufacturing, like small scale manufacturing and CNC and so forth, and less of the artsy side of the maker movement. And comparing those two with Maker Central is, I mean, catered for more the social media, the YouTube makers. So it's become a lot about the networking as well. And you have like basically all the exhibitors there are companies, and most of them are reasonably well-established companies showing their wares and goods, and people come to meet, you know, Jimmy DiResta and Bobby Duke and April Wilkerson and so forth. So they have huge lines of people just waiting to do a meet and greet, in a sense.
Yeah.
And you don't, at least unless you're like Adam Savage, I guess, you don't have kind of that exposure when you're at Maker Faire, I feel, as you do at Maker Central. It's a lot more catered to the social media side of things.
Got it. That makes sense. And you gave a talk at Maker Central, right?
Not at Maker Central, but at Maker Faire.
Maker Faire, okay. What was your talk about?
The topic was the maker knife and the challenges of production in China.
Got it. Yeah. Cool.
So it was going through basically what we talked about before, but in a lot more detail, of course.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what are you working on right now?
So right now it's a bunch of things. My next video, I don't know, when is this podcast going to come out?
This will actually go live tomorrow at the time of this recording. So then
it's going to be a sneak preview. I think my video is probably going to be up during the weekend or beginning of next week. It's going to be about the huge, or I should say enormous, antiques fair up at Alameda Point in just outside San Francisco.
Oh, cool.
So when I was in San Francisco last year, I made this video about going to various flea markets and antique shops. This year, I made a video specifically about this one enormous outdoor antiques market with like 800 sellers.
Oh, geez.
It took 5 hours just to go through it once.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a niche video, but it's pretty cool.
Yeah.
If you're into that kind of stuff, I definitely recommend it.
Yeah. I remember seeing the one from last year, the other market that you had gone to, and those are just always crazy. Just the stuff that you can find are just wild.
Yeah. I think if I were to change my career, I would definitely become like a picker and antiques dealer, specializing in like industrial stuff for sure.
Yeah, that'd be real cool. Well, Sweetman, well, I don't want to take a ton of your time or a ton more, and I definitely appreciate it. But for people that were wanting to check you out, just your website and YouTube, is that where you send people?
Yeah, I think my website is more if you're into the more design side of things. It's more of a portfolio for the design persona.
Got it.
In a sense, everything else is basically it's YouTube and Instagram. Switch and Lever, wherever you find Switch and Lever, that's probably going to be me.
Got it. Oh, and where did that name come from?
I've gone through so many different kind of names. I think it came when I was making the portfolio website for trying to apply to, I think it was when I applied to my master's education, actually. Or actually, I can't remember. But I like tangible interaction. That's kind of my nerdy things. And switches and levers, they're both tangible interaction. So It wasn't a deep thought for sure.
Right, right. No, but it definitely fits.
It's too late to change.
It's too late to change, right. Well, cool, man. Well, I appreciate your time and chat with me. Yeah. It was a blast.
It was lots of fun. Thank you.
All right, thanks for hanging around to the end of the show. This is where I give you a very quick update about the things I've got going on inside of my shop. Again, another quick plug for Patreon. I'm trying to give better weekly updates about the projects, the ongoing projects. In addition, if there are plans, for instance, so the crib plans, if you guys are interested in building a crib, there's a level where you guys can get all of my current and future plans. But what I've got going on right now is the big thing is I got the X-Wing out last week. So I've been working on a swing that doubles as an X-Wing or is an X-Wing for my daughter. But to be honest, I mean, it was really for me because I thought it looked cool. And it is now hanging up right behind me outside. I still need to like coat it, some clear coat it so the rain doesn't destroy it. And I got the video out, so you guys can check that out. It was a really fun build. And I learned that the painting and the weathering process was probably my favorite. That's when I really felt like the vehicle was coming to life. But it's been a really interesting one. And so it doesn't have like tons of views on YouTube, which is fine, but I posted it on Reddit and got lots of comments. And probably the majority of the comments were, you really built this for you. This wasn't for your daughter, which is true. But this week in the shop, I am building something for someone that is not me, because this is actually being paid to do it. And so this is a butcher block maple countertop. And I will say that I definitely underestimated the amount of time it was going to take. I was hoping to actually install it today. So I'm actually recording this intro the same day this is going live. So this is Thursday, June the 20th. And I've almost got the whole thing glued up and I need to stain it and put a clear coat on it. But the thing is massive. It's like 7 feet by 3 feet, which when I was told it was going to be that size, I guess I just wasn't thinking how really big that is. And so I'm gluing it together in sections, in 12-foot sections, so that I can take it through my lunchbox planer, which is fun because it can just tip the whole thing over. So I'm getting quite a workout on it. But it's been a cool thing to put together. I've done a little bit of butcher block stuff on the Play Kitchen, and it was just out of pine. So doing the strips and gluing it together, I've done, but nothing at this scale and nothing really with maple that's supposed to be high quality. So that is going to be a project video that will come out soon. So if you're interested in doing something, there's definitely a few things I've done wrong and had to fix along the way that I would recommend you guys do to make it better. And then next, I've got a ton of projects I could be working on, but I think the next one is going to be some picture frames. So we've got a wall in our house, and my wife definitely wants me to build some picture frames, and I've been promising them to her for a long time. So I actually need to get them knocked out, but I'll be making several different picture frames, different sizes, different widths, but probably all out of walnut. And so I'll be doing a video just along the way about kind of that process and what I'm doing to put those together, and then some more fun stuff in the future. But as always, I'd love to know the things you guys are working on. You can hit me up at the Make or Break Shop over on Instagram. I'd love to see what you guys are working on. And until next time, go make or break something in your shop. See you guys.